I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for your Green and Gold update on Wisconsin Sports Daily, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook on the Wisconsin Sports Radio Network with Steve Sparky Pfeiffer.
You know, I was giving Ryan Wood, Packers beat writer from the Green Bay Press Gazette, I have been giving him crap for some time, including yesterday when he was in town and showed him over to Maddie's Bar and Grill over here by the radio station to have some lunch, and then he had it back about his pink, ugly suit coat that he has. And I come to realize that Andy has the pink hat, and he just took it off. You, Ryan Wood, with that pink suit coat that he wears on TV, you should let him wear your hat on TV to match the suit coat, because he's got a bald head. So give him your hat. He can wear it with his suit coat when he does his TV show in the fall. I think that works out wonderfully, Andy.
No hats on TV, Sparky.
Why?
I don't know. I don't make the rules.
You don't make the rules? I don't know. It was funny. You were wearing pink. I was like, oh, man, here we go again with this pink color. And our guy over there, Charlie, he's wearing pink today as well. Yeah, you are. Okay, Andy Herman, it's been too long since we've talked. How's Pack-A-Day Podcast going? Are you highly successful and still killing it like always?
That's what the rumors are saying. No, it's been going great. We are ready to kick off training camp, obviously, next week, which is, you know, everything just supercharges starting then. We've got through sort of the doldrums. We've had content still every single day. So, yeah, it's going very well.
Your kids know who you are now after a little bit of the off season. You get to hang out with them, see them. You're not stuck in that office of yours, never coming out and working 24/7. I'm sure they appreciated seeing their dad for a little while.
Yes, that is one of the very nice aspects of this sort of offseason. Just went on a vacation. Door County was fantastic. So, yeah, it was a good time.
Love Door County. Sister Bay Bowl, the fish fry. Ah, it's good stuff.
We went bowling. Yeah. We hit the bowl. Yeah.
Yep, Sister Bay Bowl is fun. Okay, so I want to start off at running back. Let's just start there. Where are you on Josh Jacobs? Are you on he's getting older? He lost a half a step last year. He's a singles and doubles hitter. He's maybe not that home run hitter anymore. What's your take on him coming into the season?
I didn't know which direction you were going to go with that question, considering that there's still, you know, a large cloud out there over what's actually going to happen with Josh Jacobs.
No, I'm not talking about that. I just want to stick to football. Right.
Deal. So to me, from a pure football standpoint, I don't have any concern about Josh Jacobs. Both PFF and I, who obviously graded Josh Jacobs throughout the course of the year, still had very high grades on Josh Jacobs. A lot of the stuff where he was not able to kind of get some of the stuff going to me, and I'm assuming PFF felt the same way because they graded him pretty similarly, is because the offensive line just didn't generate much for him. He was able to generate yardage when there was nothing there, which he's been able to do basically his entire career. And right before literally the entire season imploded, exploded, and everything else, he had that awesome play against the Broncos, took it to the house for his longest touchdown, I think, of the season and maybe of his time in Green Bay so far. So I think he's never, at least over the last few years, he's not a consistent home run hitter. That's not exactly what you're paying him to be. But you give him stuff to work with, and he's going to take some of those, you know, 3, 4, 5 yard runs and turn them into 10, 15, 20 yard runs. He can still do that. And in the meantime, he creates a lot for you when there's not a lot there.
As you get older, you tend to get hurt. And as you get hurt, it tends to take longer to rebound from that. I know all about that part, being old. The depth chart behind Josh Jacobs, I'm not as comfortable with currently because there is health issues back there as well. Are you comfortable with the depth chart behind Josh Jacobs?
It's such a weird position in totality because, again, we don't know what's going to happen with the Josh Jacobs situation. Marshawn Lloyd has been able to stay healthy for 10 total snaps of his 2-year career. And then you have Chris Brooks, who is like the perfect number 3 back, but you really don't want him to ever be the number 2 or certainly the number 1 back. He's the perfect number 3 guy. You don't want to overtax him anything more than that. If everything is perfect, if Jacobs is good to go and Lloyd is healthy and Brooks is your 3, I feel phenomenal about this running back room. I have no concerns. I go into the season with that trio of running backs all day, every day. But not knowing what's going to happen with Jacobs, and obviously, like you said, just getting a little bit older as well. And Lloyd has literally not made it through more than a regular season game in 2 years. There's a lot of question marks, and you don't have anybody else that's ready to step up if you have any situation with Lloyd or with Jacobs. So I think that's where a little bit more of the concern is. But at the same token, you don't want to sort of go in an aggressive direction and trade for a running back right now or try to do something there when you don't need four guys. And if everyone is good to go through the season, now you have four guys, you don't have really a use for that fourth guy. What I would expect this to happen is you let this thing play out throughout the course of training camp. Hope that Jacobs and Lloyd and Brooks are all good to go to start the season. Let those other guys fight it out for the practice squad spots or see if any of those other guys step up throughout the course of the offseason. And if anything happens, whether that be to Jacobs or whether that be to Lloyd or maybe even Brooks, then you go out and maybe you call Arizona. They've got at least four running backs that are probably capable of being better than what even a number three would be right now in Green Bay. You call them, you probably pick up something for a fifth, sixth, seventh round pick, and you kind of fix that going into the season. But for now, I think you're okay.
You mentioned the player whose name we do not mention on this show. Because he does not play in back-to-back games ever, so there's no need to mention his name. You mentioned his name more than we have on this show in the last year. Is that fair, Charlie?
Yeah,
I think he mentioned it. Mentioned his name four times.
And I think I maybe said it once just to
in the
you
last
mad.
Year. Yeah, that was it. Right. So there you go. For those of you that don't know who we've been talking about for the last year, now you know. Andy, the offensive line, questions everywhere. Who for you is your biggest question / concern going into training camp? You're like, I just don't know about right guard, or I just don't know about left tackle. Like, do you have a position in that starting five where you kind of have circled to see if said player is worthy of that choice or can get upended by somebody else?
Yeah, I do. But I think it's honestly easier just to talk about the entirety of the offensive line. And I can give you the optimistic view and I can give you the pessimistic view. From an optimism side, if you want to be optimistic about this offensive line, I think going into the season, Jordan Morgan looked good at left tackle in preseason a year ago. Yep. It's the position he played his entire college career. He gets to stick at one spot. I think this is going to be very good. And Rashid Walker was terrible last year. And I think Morgan at minimum should be better than what Walker put on tape a season ago. So I think there's reason to be optimistic there. At left guard, when Aaron Banks was injured last year, he played very poorly. When he was healthy, he played very well. And I thought his best game was probably that final playoff game against the Bears. So there's still hope to me for Aaron Banks, especially if he's healthy. Sean Ryan, I thought he improved the center position when he got there. Elton Jenkins did a very poor job when he was at center a season ago. Ryan made it better, and now he gets a full offseason at center to actually learn the ins and outs of the position, get on the same page with Jordan Love. That should benefit him and the position. Right guard, Anthony Belton didn't play guard at all until they moved him there the week of. He practiced that tackle the entirety of the offseason and even into the season up until that week where they moved him to guard to start him at right guard. And so not only him getting hopefully some sort of year two jump, but also just a little bit more experience and being able to stick at right guard should help him. And then at right tackle, of course, Zach Tom was beat up so much last year. He didn't play at the end of the year. And even when he was out there, you could tell he wasn't 100%. And he still played well when he was out there. He should be back, good to go. And I think there's reasons to be optimistic about all five of those positions. On the pessimistic side, Jordan Morgan, you have to have be a good left tackle. And we still have not seen a good Jordan Morgan season. We're going into year three. And so now to have him be the protector of your blind side, there's certainly some room for concern there. Aaron Banks was an overpay no matter what way you want to spin it. And he was bad when he was injured. And guess what? He was already injured at minicamp, which is not a great start. Sean Ryan was an improvement, but I didn't think he played great at center. And specifically from a pass protection standpoint, he allowed far too many easy wins for the defense. That's something he has to clean up and just be a little bit more consistent overall. Anthony Belton, well, he was a spark at right guard. He still was a net negative and played poorly at right guard in the second half of that season. And he needs to take a step up to solidify that job. Zach Thomas coming off a major injury. And while he should be good to go, you never quite know how those things, kind of work out at the end of the day. And after that, you need like eight guys on your offensive line to get through a full, 17 game plus season. Jaeger Burton has made a good first impression as a fifth round rookie. Outside of that, I have no faith in anybody else as depth on this offensive line. So again, reasons for optimism, yes, but there are a lot of questions that are going to have to be answered. And it's an offensive line that's coming off a really tough year a season ago.
Talk with Andy Herman, Packaday Podcast. Follow him on X at Andy Herman, NFL, Packaday Podcast, at Packaday Podcast on X as well. Joins us here on Wisconsin Sports Daily. Steve Sparky Fiverr with you. That offensive line, last year during training camp, I was harping on Charlie that Escalade should be at right guard. Quit screwing around with him at tackle. He's not going to play tackle. You have your tackles of the future at left and right tackle. Just play him at guard. And they refused. And then they got stuck having to play him.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
At guard, which is fine. Your Jaeger Burden character, I don't know jack about other than y'all seem to fall in love with this guy and be that dude. So is he good enough, do you think, to unseat Escalade? Because I don't think they're taking out the million-dollar man Banks. He ain't going to sit with that contract. No. Left and right tackle's not moving. I mean, center, maybe, but they just gave Ryan a new deal. So even that I would find hard to believe, unless you were to flip-flop him and he goes back to right guard. How do you see that playing out?
I think the interesting thing about Burton, and I didn't get a chance to watch him pre-draft. I watched him after the fact, and I really, really liked what I saw. But I think what's really interesting about him is, it's not even that I don't think anybody on the beat or anything else was like just, you know, crazy about this guy. And then he gets with the ones. Obviously, injuries had a lot to do with that. There were a couple guys that were missing throughout the course of OTAs and minicamps. But when Matt LaFleur was asked about him, he said that he's very much in contention for playing time and snaps this season. And for a fifth-round rookie, when the pads haven't even come on yet, that's a pretty crazy statement to kind of make that early. Not in a bad way. I'm just saying usually don't see that from Matt LaFleur. So I thought that was very noteworthy. What I will note here about Jagger Burton is this is a team that for basically the entirety of Matt LaFleur's tenure has not just had five offensive linemen. There is somebody that has been rotating just about every single season throughout the course of the year. So if you told me that there was a rotation between, you know, Anthony Belton and Jagger Burton at right guard, and Burton was playing 25, 30 snaps per game all the way from week one moving forward just to start getting him ingrained, sure, I would totally believe that. If you're one injury on the interior, whether that's Sean Ryan or Aaron Banks or Anthony Belton, and we saw, of course, Aaron Banks already have issues with it, I could easily see Burton take one of those three spots. So whether he's the first guy up on the interior and that top backup on the inside, or whether it is a platoon sort of situation, Green Bay has been creative with those situations in the past. It wouldn't shock me one bit if Burton was able to get his name in that conversation. That said, well, the pads haven't even come on yet, so let's see what this fifth-round rookie can do when the pads come on.
Defensive side of the ball, Micah Parsons has been having a group of the young guys been working out with him during the offseason that we've seen. It came up the other day. Why isn't Lucas Van Ness working out with those dudes like everybody else? But either way, we don't know. Maybe something else has come up or he wasn't invited or whatever. But of that group of young guys that was working out with Van Ness, who do you have your eye on to take that jump this year going into this season?
And Baron Sorrell is the one that I think is going to get the biggest opportunity. If you were asking me who I would pencil in as the starter opposite LVN while Micah is out, I think I would put Baron Sorrell at the top of that list right now. But I think the one that intrigues me the most is Denai Dennis Sutton. Even in minicamp and OTAs, again, pads not on, whatever caveat you want to throw there, I was impressed by just his demeanor and some of the juice that he had. Even they took him and moved him inside on some obvious passing downs in practice already. He already got time with the ones already. I think that was one of the really cool things about this draft class already, is we saw Brandon Cisse, Denai Dennis Sutton, Jagger Burton. We saw all four of those top rookies that were drafted this year. Chris McClellan is the other one that all got time with the ones in OTAs and minicamps. That's not a normal thing for the Packers. So Denai Dennis Sutton's the one I'm keeping my eye on the most, but Baron Sorrell, I think, is going to get that first opportunity.
I'm not there on Dennis Sutton. I wasn't there on Dennis Sutton when they drafted him. I'm still not there. He's long. He looks stiff to me. He doesn't look like he has a tremendous amount of bend to get around a corner. I don't know, man. Like, watching him, I just don't see, oh, man, he's going to go get double-digit sacks and he's going to go be that guy. I don't get excited about watching him on film.
Well, no. I mean, he's a fourth-round pick for a reason. You know, I think there was a lot of people who were looking to draft him in the second or even the third round. I thought fourth round was the exact round that he should have gone in. I thought Green Bay got great value in that fourth round. But I will say I was more on your side of things just watching the tape. Watching him in person, again, no pads on, but watching him in person, I came away a little bit more impressed than what I saw from the tape consistently. So we'll see what, again, that looks like when the pads come on.
What about the cornerback room going into camp here? Because Andy just starts laughing because he knows. I mean, you know, everybody can defend Keyshawn, fine, whatever. We won't even talk about him. But Carrington Valentine had moments last year where I thought he was okay. And then he had moments you're like, what in the hell are you doing at the same point, right? And then you've got, you know, you bring in a free agent corner, you draft a couple of corners too. Did they get better in that room?
They certainly have more bodies and more competition.
No, that's not what I asked you. I said, did they get better? I didn't ask you if they had more bodies.
They got better simply because the players at like St. Juice, home run? What do we get?
Lara just robbed a dude at the wall, at the wall. Great catch. All right, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're all good. I didn't have it on, so I'm glad I can just look at your reaction.
Yeah, they're still down 4-1 in the sixth.
All right, they'll be all right. Where were we going with that? What were we talking about?
Cornerback room. Are they better?
Oh, yeah. I was trying to forget that we were talking about the corner. Can we go back to talking about the Brewers?
No.
I think just having St. Juice and Brandon Cisse and even maybe Damani Jackson in that room certainly gives them a lot more depth. So that makes them better. All I want from this room is a legitimate, true competition at outside corner. I don't want Keyshawn Nixon or Carrington Valentine or any of these guys just to get handed it. If they end up being the best two and it's Valentine and Nixon and they beat out Cisse and St. Juice and Damani Jackson and Kamal Haddon and whoever else wants to step up into that conversation, great, so be it. Let the best two guys win. But I just don't want anything handed to anybody, whatever the contract is or what their status with the team is. Let those guys go out. I do think, I talked about this offseason, Keyshawn Nixon, I think, is underrated by the fan base and overrated by the team. He is in the Ladarius Gunter wing of. Don't blame him always for having to be the number one guy when he has no right being the number one guy.
No. I'm going to stop you. That dude, at the end of what was it, 2 years ago or whatever, he came to him about returning kicks or whatever. He's like, man, I want to be CB1, man. I'm CB1. I don't think I really want to go back and do that again. As soon as you said that, target on your back, you better go do that then, right? Yeah.
That's fair. Trust me, I am not a Keyshawn Nixon guy, so I'm not trying to be out here and defending in any stretch of the imagination. Right. Again, I do think he's a little bit better than Packers fans think he is. I think he's worse than the Packers think he is, but I just want that to be a competition. I think Cisse is a very naturally talented corner. I'm excited to see what he can do. And I think St. Juice had a really nice season. Going back and watching his film from last year, it was, 400-ish snaps, but yeah. I thought he played really, really well, and I think he fits this scheme very, very well also. So I'm interested to see who wins those two spots.
Andy, heard me, last question. Were you for or against going from a veteran kicker to a rookie kicker?
I don't care. I just need whoever is kicking to make their damn kicks. Like that's where I'm at with the entire thing. And here's the thing, where we get into training camp, it's going to be kicker watch every single day. And you know, who's making the kicks and who's missing the kicks. It's not going to matter. Like, cause McManus was awesome in training camp a year ago and it didn't matter one iota come the regular season. And so,
well, he was hurt most of the season.
That's partly true.
And then he was 13 in a row going into that playoff game and then had a bad game. It happens.
Trace Mack could go 1,000 for 1,000 in training camp. And if he misses his first kick, we're all just going to be like, here we go again. He's not going to be able to make his kicks.
Correct.
And if it's worse in training camp and he doesn't do well or Haversick out kicks him or whatever, and we're going to all go into the season being like, here we go again. They're not going to be able to make their kicks. Yep. It's another, you know, Braden Narvison. So at the end of the day, I'm in the Matt LaFleur camp of like, I don't even want to talk about kickers. I'm done with kicking competition. They're probably going to break our hearts at the end of the year. I trust no special teams in Green Bay, except maybe Daniel Whalen. I just hope whoever ends up winning the job can go out there and perform when they need to this season.
I hated the move. I'm surprised
even if you wanted to move on from McManus, which fine, I'm surprised because Haversick just feels like a kicker there for being a kicker there. It doesn't feel like it's legit. One of my bold predictions I had is that Haversick will outkick Trace Mack in training camp and it won't matter.
Correct.
Like, Trace Mack is still going to get the job.
Yep.
Even if you want to move on from McManus, I thought they would have brought somebody in to be a legitimate true contender / competition. It's a sixth round rookie. You've done this with Anders Carlson. There's no guarantee that this works. So to just say, yep, Trace Mack is our guy, I'm relatively surprised that they went in that direction.
Before you know it, training camp practices will be here next week, and we'll get to back to getting reports from training camp and people sitting on the bleachers outside and watching training camp. And I cannot believe we're here already, but it feels like it has been quite longer. Maybe because we experienced Giannis drama, Brewers have been playing well, but it really does feel like it's been a long time since we've seen an actual football game for the Green Bay Packers. Andy Herman, Pack-A-Day Podcast. Go follow all of his stuff on YouTube, on X at Andy Herman NFL. Great follow, and especially when you get to training camp. Like, with all due respect to everybody else, he is the best at play-by-play in training camp, like, all day long. Andy, thank you so much for coming on, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, appreciate you as well, Sparky. Have a good one.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.